Welcome back to Unveiling the Secrets in the Ten Scrolls. My name is Dave Blanchard. Oh, we're getting deep into this process and it's getting so exciting. What resistance are you getting on a daily basis when it's time to pick up those scrolls and read them? Are you starting to break through some of those old accumulated habits? Are you still finding some of those habits in open rebellion? Oh, keep fighting through until success is yours. This scroll, I Will Laugh at the World, is going to assist us in taking on the most complex, difficult habit of thinking that is keeping us from sticking to this structure. Using our six advisors analogy, I want you to picture yourself at the head of the boardroom table of your mind. On the right-hand side of the table, there are three advisors. They're called external world advisors. These are the thought processes we have about things external to us. The thoughts we have about people, the thoughts we have while completing tasks, and then just thinking about thinking, ideas, structure, order, problem solving. On the left-hand side of the table, three more advisors. These are internal advisors. These are thoughts that we have about our own value and our life and our roles and our motivation. Collectively, our six advisors, with us here at the head of the boardroom table of our mind. Now on the right-hand side, farthest one away, all the way down at the end of the table, this advisor is called systems thinking. I want you to see this advisor. Watch it stand up at the end of the table, flex its muscles, and scream aloud, "I won't be controlled by anyone." Now watch that advisor turn and stick its finger in your chest. "Not even by you." And here you are, sitting at the head of the boardroom table, taking charge of these thought processes, and this one wants to usurp your power. Weak is he who allows his thoughts to control his actions. Strong is he who forces his actions to control his thoughts. Which voice is dominant when it comes time to read the scrolls? Is it this advisor down at the end of the table in rebellion, not wanting to stick to structure, coming up with any excuse it can for why it can't spend 4.5 minutes reading a scroll? There's not time, there's not energy, I got a million things going on, when in fact that 4.5 minutes will put you back on top of the wave, aware and conscious, ready to take on these sabotaging thought processes so that you can create a successful day. Now this isn't schizophrenia. It's just our thought processes, accumulated habits over time. Can you hear these systemic thought processes? They don't have a funny bone. Everything is dead serious. In fact, they process dualistically, which is all or nothing, right or wrong, win or lose, life or death. No funny bone. Which voice is dominant in your life? You here at the head of the boardroom table? Or this advisor down there who just wants to destroy anything that has to do with structure? This is just a habit of thinking. Now, this is a difficult habit to shift because these thought processes, these systemic thoughts, involve our body and the release of chemicals. These are the thought processes that in a large part drive our emotional state. It is time to take control of these thought processes, those that are resisting the structure, resisting your new habits of thinking, the ones that are hanging on to those accumulated habits, and put you at the head of the boardroom table in charge of these thoughts. It is time to do this, and this scroll is just in time. I will laugh at the world. And might I add, we will laugh at this thought process and how it impacts our lives, how we get attached to our thoughts, how we crush our friends and those we love. We get in these right-wrong battles. Matter of fact, if I were to call some of the people who know you, who are closest to you, and I asked, does so-and-so ever have really strong opinions about the way things ought to be done? What would they say to me? And what might this advisor say to you? Well, they need to, too. Yes, but the favorite phrase from this advisor, step back with me. Let's hear how these thought processes have caused us to catastrophize, to need to be right, to create expectations, to over-amplify to make more out of things or to keep us stuck in truly awful situations. And let us use this scroll to assist you in sitting here at the head of the boardroom table. Sometimes it will simply take some humor. I'd like you to reflect for a moment. How often have you scheduled something that you want to do, but not really? You don't have a habit, such as exercise or diet or studying something new or reading the scrolls 3 times a day. What happens after the initial excitement wears off and you are there to stick to the structure? Do you find yourself procrastinating, obsessively thinking about new and better ways to try to do it, anything but having to do it that way? Do you ever feel a heaviness, a sense of obligation, a fear of consequences if you don't do it? Are you a perfectionist who, as Harvey Schoff, my development partner in the Six Advisors Assessment, says that we're involved in this unyielding, unrelenting pursuit of the unachievable? We can't do it perfectly, so we don't do it at all. We talked about this in a previous scroll. How about catastrophizing those worst-case scenarios that we play over and over and over again? We go from living in luxury to living in the street, and it's all over, and our business has failed, and our relationships are over. We might as well quit, and far too often we do. Because these thought processes, these systemic thought processes, process dualistically, all, nothing, win, lose, life, death, there is no spectrum, just polar opposites. We get attached to an expectation meaning a concrete condition for happiness. The neuroscientists would call it a mental construct. We construct this idea in our mind. Our mind is so attached to that idea that when anyone or anything threatens that expectation, that mental construct, our body autonomically goes into a defensive mechanism to protect it. We're so attached to it. What do you do when you try to share an idea and someone doesn't give you the time of day, or they try to change it, or they try to fix it? How do you respond? Do you fight back? Are you more passive-aggressive, or are you just hurt? Some people can destroy a relationship over the topping on a pizza. The bottom line, these thought processes are too serious, often far too complicated, too overwhelming, and are void of a funny bone. As we study Scroll 7, I will laugh at the world. We are going to discover that laughter serves many purposes. One, it brings perspective to situations and to ourself. It is cathartic, it's cleansing. Have you ever laughed so hard that your fingernails tingled? When we're experiencing fear and anxiety, our body fills up with cortisol and those fear dendrites, and laughter can cleanse our body, restoring perspective, common sense, and empathy, the ability to step into someone's world and see what's going on in their life. For an example, have you ever been in a situation you felt so strongly about something and you got into a right-wrong battle and you said something that hurt someone, and a few hours later, it's like you're starting to wake up and you realize what you've done and you need to apologize? Laughter can assist us in getting to that moment in time quicker. We'll also discover that from a physiological standpoint, laughter is truly healthy and healing. We'll also discover that laughter helps us stay present in the now so that we can seal up the container of life and not let one drop spill upon the sand, needing to be right or catastrophizing or rebelling against structure. Truly, those who laugh will be wealthy. Wealth meaning well-being. We'll have well-being. Every 4 years in the United States, we elect a president. And a couple of weeks before the election, they hold the Alfred G. Smith Foundation Dinner. This is an opportunity for the two candidates to come and participate in some self-deprecating humor. Of all of the time, this is my favorite time in the election, because the candidates show up real and genuine and authentic. And the humor is healing, both to their campaigns and to our nation. Are you in need of a little bit more humor? Are you in need of a little bit more healing? Then join me. Let's step into this powerful scroll. Scroll number 7. I will laugh at the world. No living creature can laugh except man. Trees may bleed when they're wounded, and beasts in the field may cry in pain and hunger. Yet only I have the gift of laughter, and it is mine to use whenever I choose. Henceforth, I will cultivate the habit of laughter. Think for a moment as we cultivate. We turn over the dark and dry soil. We plant seeds. We pull the weeds. We nurture it with water and fertilizer. Smile. All that crap that's happened in our lives. And it grows and we can harvest it and partake when we are hungry. Let us break through our stoic, sullen faces with that plow of laughter. And let us plant these seeds. Let us put on the fertilizer of all those experiences. Og will talk about this in a few moments. Because some of the best humor comes out of real life situations. Og goes on to say something that's very profound. This was 1968, long before the research was conducted. I will smile and my digestion will improve. I will chuckle and my burdens will be lightened. I will laugh and my life will be lengthened, for this is the great secret of long life, and now it is mine. This is Mark Twain. He who laughs, lasts. Researchers are now telling us that when we laugh, it reduces the cortisol levels in our body. Remember, cortisol is released when we have an expectation and life's not showing up that way, and the sympathetic nervous system begins to release cortisol. When we're catastrophizing those worst-case scenarios, we have the chronic release of cortisol, and we know that a significant number of illnesses that show up later in our life are a direct result of this chronic release of cortisol over time, causing hypertension, impacting negatively our immune system, exacerbating diabetes. The research is now telling us that laughter reduces cortisol levels and adrenaline levels, those things that fatigue our adrenal glands. There's an increase of interferon and white blood cells that it helps stabilize blood pressure. That even with diabetics, that if they have a meal at a comedy club, that their sugar levels don't rise as high as normal. One researcher suggested that laughing 100 times a day may be as effective as a 20-minute cardio workout. Research is showing that there is a connection between laughter and depression that, in fact, might mitigate some of those challenges. In short, research is proving what Og wrote in 1968, that this is one of the great secrets for living a long life, and now it is mine. Now, some of those humorous life experiences were costly, but making the choice to laugh is a whole lot less expensive than a prescription. Now, I'm not suggesting that you don't take a prescription that a doctor gives to you. But the research is showing that a great number of ills can be mitigated or perhaps even eliminated if we cultivated this habit of laughter. I will laugh at the world. And most of all, I will laugh at myself. For man is most comical when he takes himself too seriously. When I reflect on the financial loss that Ramona and I took in 1988 and 89, and then spending those 10 years paying back that $1 million in debt, I look back at that time, and retrospectively, it is probably one of the greatest gifts our family was ever given. I had such a proud heart, and the power that governs abundance needed to cut it out with a dull knife and give me a heart transplant, so that I could actually care about other people. I remember two things that when I think about them, they just, at one end of the spectrum, they make me cry. And at the other end of the spectrum, I just laugh and shake my head. One of them I remember. We had this beautiful portico share that went over the front driveway, Circle Drive. And there was a moment that I was climbing into the back of someone's Ford automobile. Now, I had a Ferrari, I had a Mercedes, and I remember having this conscious moment. How can I let people know who see me sitting in the back seat of this car, as if they actually could, that I drive a Mercedes? You want to set yourself up for the universe to come and rescue your soul. Get in that space. Now, to compound things, I wore a Rolex watch. And I always wore it so it was always seen as I talked. Now, when I speak, I sometimes talk about this watch. How are you today? How are things going? I remember one time I was late for a meeting. And I realized, I don't have my Rolex watch on. I went back home and got it. Oh, we can become so attached to our things. Later in life, I picked up an Acura NSX. That's a great little sports car. And one day I realized that I was again becoming my things. I was enjoying being seen in this fancy little sports car. And so I decided to do something about it. I parked it in a garage there at the office, and I covered it, and I left it there for 9 months while I drove a 10-year-old Honda Civic with a cracked windshield. We are so comical when we become our things, and we actually believe that because I have more things than they have things, that somehow I am a better person. Man is most comical when he can't laugh at himself. And we take ourselves too seriously. Our accomplishments, our titles, our money. Let us step back and have a good laugh at our own expense. Now, don't get me wrong. Nice things are great. This isn't a discussion about nice things. This is a discussion about how they were impacting me. Reflect on some times in your life when you showed up, perhaps ridiculously angry, stuck on a situation, needing to be right. For an example, I have a son. I just love him to death. Since he was young, when something went wrong, I would sit down with him and begin to talk to him. And they literally talk to him, and his eyes would glaze over, as if he went to another planet. Well, for years that caused me to become even more intentional in my discussion, which caused his eyes to glaze over even more, and he went to an even farther away planet. I still remember one day, we were standing in the dining room area of our home, and I was looking into his eyes, and he was getting much bigger, and I was talking, I was getting more intense and more determined and more convinced I was going to break through these glazed eyes and get inside the head of this young man and straighten him out. And I became aware of what I was doing. And I started to laugh. And the harder I laughed, the more his face began to crack. And soon he was laughing. And we realized that for so many years, this intention was of no value to either one of us. He loved humor, and the best way to talk to him was to put something into proper perspective so that we could have a good laugh about where we were and what had happened. And miraculously, he behaved differently. In the beginning of this scroll, I talked about those systemic thought processes that get stuck on the need to be right. I even mentioned that we can destroy a marriage over which topping we should put on a pizza. Oh, I would encourage us all in those tense life moments that we step back and see for what it is and just have a great laugh. talking about taking ourselves too seriously, Og says, never will I fall into this trap of the mind. For though I be nature's greatest miracle, am I not still a mere grain tossed about by the winds of time? Do I truly know whence I came or whether I am bound? Will my concern for this day not seem foolish 10 years hence? Oh my goodness, we can destroy our relationship and 10 years later hardly be able to remember why. Why should I permit the petty happenings of today to disturb me and those around me? What can take place before this sun sets, which will not seem insignificant in the river of centuries? I suppose one of the greatest blessings of living a few years is seeing a few financial cycles, to see healing amongst family members or friends, to see debts paid and income earned and assets accumulated. Oh, let us not have the petty happenings of today adversely or even permanently destroy our future. Let us love. Let us persist. Let us embrace our own genius. Let us live each day as if it is our last. Let us take on obstacles as they occur. Let us laugh to keep them in perspective, knowing that no matter how difficult things might appear in the moment, there is light ahead. The antithesis of laughter is depression. Laughter lifts us, puts things in perspective. There is much about our world that can be depressing. Let us not get caught in this trap of the mind of taking ourselves too seriously or material possessions too seriously. Let us focus on becoming the greatest person that we can become, so that we can endure anything that lies before us. I will laugh at the world. And how can I laugh? When confronted with man or deed which offends me so as to bring forth my tears or my curses. 4 words I will train myself to say until they become a habit so strong that immediately they will appear in my mind whenever good humor threatens to depart from me. These words, passed down from the ancients, will carry me through every adversity and maintain my life in balance. These 4 words are, "This too shall pass." I will laugh at the world, for all worldly things shall indeed pass. When I am heavy with heartache, I shall console myself that this too shall pass. When I am puffed with success, I shall warn myself that this too shall pass. When I am strangled in poverty, I shall tell myself that this too shall pass. When I am burdened with wealth, I shall tell myself that this too shall pass. Yea, verily, where is he who built the pyramid? Is he not buried within the stone? And will the pyramid one day not also be buried under sand? If all things shall pass, why should I be concerned for today? I will laugh at the world. Remember in Scroll 5 when Og asked those poignant questions, should I concern myself over events which I may never witness? Should I torment myself with problems that may never come to pass? Og is now asking us to take this one step farther. In this case, it has already happened. How are we going to handle it in the moment? I have hesitated to go here, but I'm going to. Because our mission is to heal torn bodies and torn minds. My primary internal motivation for spending my life teaching these principles is to reach and touch people who are in a dark night, to assist them in shortening the amount of time that they spend in that darkness, so that they can indeed find the light of joy again in their life. Some of these moments can take us right to the edge, where we start to contemplate alternatives, such as life insurance policies, to solve the problems that we will leave behind, believing that there may be no other solution. Some may find themselves pleading to God, seeking assistance. Some may, as I did in anger and frustration, cry out, "I long to cry to the God of my youth, but the God of my youth will not hear my cry. I must either change my God or change my cry." Og speaks of this in Scroll 10, when he asks this question, "Who is of so little faith that in a moment of great disaster or heartbreak has not called to his God? Who has not cried out when confronted with danger, death, or mystery beyond his normal experience or comprehension? From where has this deep instinct come, which escapes from the mouth of all living creatures in moments of peril?" Our faith can be challenged, our faith can be shattered, and having lived through one of those dark nights with all the elements discussed, to emerge victorious, I can tell you the day will come when you will see the purpose in the suffering and the hand of a great power lifting you. This too shall pass. And when it does, and you reflect back on some of the things that you experienced, and especially some of the ways in which we respond, there will be private moments when you will smile, maybe even chuckle a little. You will have grown in ways that would have been impossible without this experience, and now you are uniquely prepared to bless the lives of others, to reach out your hand and lift them up. Let us endure well that which we are called upon to experience. Let us shift our questions from "Why is this happening?" to "What am I to learn?" or "What can I learn from this experience?" And then, how can I use that knowledge to serve others? There is nothing more joyful than to have experienced the darkness, find the light, reach your hand into the darkness, and assist another human being to find the light. This too shall pass, and often it will pass quicker if we stop resisting and fighting and resenting, if we can shift and embrace and endure well. This too shall pass. One of my favorite lines from the movie The Count of Monte Cristo: "Do your best, and I will do mine." I will laugh at the world. I will paint this day with laughter. I will frame this night in song. Never will I labor to be happy. Rather, I will remain too busy to be sad. I will enjoy today's happiness today. It is not a grain to be stored in a box. It is not wine to be saved in a jar. It cannot be saved for the morrow. It must be sown and reaped on the same day. And this I will do henceforth. We could add to this, I will live this day as if it is my last. I will experience the joy and the laughter in the moment. I will laugh at the world. And with my laughter, all things will be reduced to their proper size. We often make things worse than they actually are. That cortisol coursing through our body, we start to read it with our intuition as if something even more horrific is happening. that fear, that false evidence appearing real. Laughter brings it to its proper size. I will laugh at my failures, and they will vanish in clouds of new dreams. I will laugh at my successes, and they will shrink to their true size. I will laugh at evil, and it will die untasted. I will laugh at goodness, and it will thrive and abound. Each day will be triumphant only when my smiles bring forth smiles from others. And this I do in selfishness, for those on whom I frown are those who purchase not my goods. Now look at that, both in terms of selling something literally and the metaphor for sharing our love, sharing our unity in a family, in our love for another person. Are they accepting our love? Are they buying into those feelings that we have for them? Oh, not if we mope around and frown and we're constantly feeling depressed and angry and resentful. Remember, what is my weather condition? I will laugh at the world. Henceforth will I shed only tears of sweat, for those of sadness or remorse or frustration are of no value in the marketplace, whilst each smile can be exchanged for gold, and each kind word spoken from my heart can build a castle. We can find 5,000 people who can help build ours, or we can smile and assist 5,000 people in building theirs. What's the natural result? We don't smile to get a castle. When we smile, the castle is built. It is the natural outcome. Do you want to be abundant, even wealthy as worldly things go? Endure your challenges well. This too shall pass. Don't be so serious you cannot laugh at yourself. And know that each day is only triumphant when what? When my smiles bring forth smiles from others. But when is it my time? When are they going to lift me? Remember, he said, I do this in selfishness. For when I focus on assisting others to smile, to lift them out of the darkness, what happens? I experience abundance. Remember, abundance is not something that we win. Abundance is not something that we seek to receive ourselves. Abundance is a sacred process in which we actively participate and eventually become. Never will I allow myself to become so important, so wise, so dignified, so powerful, that I forget how to laugh at myself and my world. In this matter, I will always remain as a child. For only as a child am I given the ability to look up to others. And so long as I look up to another, I will never grow too long for my cot. I will laugh at the world. And then one of the great truths about abundance. And so long as I can laugh, never will I be poor. This then is one of nature's greatest gifts. I will waste it no more. Only with laughter and happiness can I truly become a success. Are we catching the vision of this principle? We laugh at ourselves, we endure well, and we use our experience to lift others, to encourage them to smile, to bring joy to their life. And as a result, we are abundant. Only with laughter and happiness can I enjoy the fruits of my labor. Were it not so, far better would it be to fail. For happiness is the wine that sharpens the taste of the meal. To enjoy success, I must have happiness. And laughter will be the maiden who serves me. and in turn I will use it to serve others. I will be happy. I will be successful. I will be the greatest salesman the world has ever known. If you are a victorious survivor of the dark night, take a few moments and reflect on your experience. Laugh at yourself. Own your experience and use it to serve others. There are many in our society today that need to know that this too shall pass. If you are currently in the dark night, take courage. Laugh as often as you can to keep perspective. Endure well. Seek to know what lessons you are to learn so that you can be prepared for the joy that will inevitably come. As we study the latest research in neuroscience, we also discover one other exciting benefit of laughter. Neuroscientists have discovered that our brains are absolutely connected in many ways. They've discovered a special neuron called a mirror neuron that resides in the subconscious brain and reads with great accuracy someone else's mood. May I share with you a couple of paragraphs from Dan Goldman's seminal work entitled Social Intelligence? He writes, "Even among complete strangers, a moment of playfulness, even outright silliness, forms an instant resonance. In what may be yet another instance of psychology trying to prove the obvious, pairs of strangers were assigned to play a series of silly games together. During the games, one person had to talk through a straw while directing the other, wearing a blindfold, to toss a Nerf ball back and forth. The strangers invariably fell into guffaws at their haplessness. When strangers played the same silly game without the blindfold and straw, however, they never cracked a smile. Yet the laughing pairs fell into a strong, immediate sense of closeness even after spending just a few minutes together. Indeed, laughter may be the shortest distance between two brains, an unstoppable, infectious spread that builds an instant social bond. It is clearly a lot more fun to be around someone who is fun, or who is funny, or who does not take things too seriously all the time. Good, honest, integrous, humorous, playful, attractive. Let us keep our own lives in perspective with laughter. Let us attract others to us with laughter. Let us live longer and healthier with laughter. Let us spend the next 30 days reading this scroll, fighting through that systemic advisor that's rebelling against structure, that one that needs to be right, that has no funny bone. Let us fight through this advisor this month. Let us sit here at the head of the boardroom table of our mind, in charge of our thought processes, consciously stepping into the world of another person, persisting until we succeed, even with the sting of the blade, keeping it in perspective, embracing our own goodness and our own uniqueness, living this day as if it is our last, lifting and building others and joyfully working, truly being the master of our emotions, in control of our own weather condition, maintaining perspective while remembering to laugh often. I will laugh at the world. Let us meet again in 30 days, our burdens a little lighter, our lives a little more joyful.